Well, this is kind of a surreal moment for me. I have a lot of surreal moments in life. I don't know why. I don't know if it's just because I kind of just, you know, things kind of come full circle to a certain degree. And this is one of those. To think 13 years ago, you know, Celeste and I, you know, this is probably before we were even married, going to those, you know, those marriage get-togethers to talk about the marriage and the parenting piece. And I don't know, were we at your place, Seth and Ann, at some point? Did you guys ever host them at your apartment complex or not? But I don't know. But we had those going on. And then that ventured off into the couples retreat. And then we had all these couples times, dad's times, conferences, faith walkers. This year for faith walkers, I finally realized my ultimate goal for my children is to go to faith walkers with them when they have their own children, and for it to be a family gathering. To see those little reunions for those 4 days, that is sweet to see that. And then, for the Rockers, teaming up with us, helping us raise these kids, and the sitters, the babysitters, thinking about that. And, just a couple months ago, we had a babysitter and said, your kids are out of control. We're like, yes, all right, let's get this taken care of. And for the honesty, from the people, serving in the School of Rock, we're in this together. And so and then to see Austin up here, to share. And I wish you would have had some pictures with you, Austin, of when you were in that stage, because you were a go-getter. I do remember that, back in those days. And to see it, and you use the word full circle. So let me go ahead and open up with a word of prayer here. Father, this is a special time for all of us as we are looking at our precious children that are here. And for some of us, the children are in the works. They will be joining us in years to come with, Lord willing, more pregnancies. But as we are looking at the responsibility piece, I just thank you for what Carl had to share along with Jeff and Austin, and that we'll be able to take these things to heart and into our mind and into application. And just for continuing dialogue taking place between these parents here. And I pray for Celeste and I as we share over the next 45 minutes that you would just guide our words and our thoughts and for us to just be able to meet some of the needs here. And I pray this in your name. Amen. All right, did you want to go ahead? Did you want to say anything else right now? So let me just preface this with saying, when we're talking about the responsibility, part of the thing that's awkward is we're talking about our kids. And I don't really necessarily like to go out into the public and just talk about our kids. Our kids are, we have five kids. The oldest is nine. Nine, and then the youngest is 2.5. A little bit different than the Healy's, where they are kind of spread out through different chapters in life. We went, let's keep them close, and they're going to kind of go through these chapters in life somewhat together. So we have the five kids that are within 6 years of each other. And they have many shortcomings. And it started with the oldest, and some of you that knew Quinlan, you would have remembered him as being a little challenging kid. Austin, you had your specialties. Quinlan had his specialties, and we are still working on these things. And I think the training and responsibility, they cross paths. There's two, they are together with this. So you're going to see, we're going to talk through some of the training stuff, but ultimately it's instilling them to be responsible. And then we went kind of talking about how that, obedience plays into that. But ultimately, our outcome for our kids is to have God-fearing, Christ-following, responsible children. I was going to ask for the icebreaker, because we hear about what we want for responsible children, but I thought it might be good just to call a couple of you out and just say, I was an irresponsible child, and this is what it looked like growing up. And then this morning, I thought, that's going to put some people, some of us wives probably don't really want to hear about our husband's moments as a child or a teenager, and then all of a sudden things come to light in the middle of all this. So I was actually, this morning I had a chance. Did anybody read Proverbs 6? Because it is a sixth day, And I don't read the Proverbs every single day, but today I did have the chance to do that. But Proverbs 6, I was trying to find a verse that would just kind of summarize what is taking place. And I know Carl had a couple verses he was locking in on, and then we had Jeff also, and Austin's sharing some of the verses, and no one went to Proverbs 6. So thank you, guys, for not doing that. But Proverbs 6, 12 through 15 gives a beautiful summary of what an irresponsible child looks like, and it also goes through what does a solid parenting look like. And you can go ahead and look at it in your NIV version, and I always like to go to the Message. The Message has just a nice version of this. So I'm going to read the Message version, but you go to Bible Gateway and you look up whatever version you want. But this is what we've got. So this is Proverbs 6, 12 through 23. It jumps around a little bit, but I think you're going to lock in with it. Riff-raff and rascals talk out of both sides of their mouths. So we're talking about irresponsible children and adults. They wink at each other. They shuffle their feet. They cross their fingers behind their backs. I don't know if you remember back in the day, I would do that. Their perverse minds are always cooking up something nasty, always stirring up trouble. Catastrophe is just around the corner for them. A total smash-up. Their lives ruined beyond repair. All right, there it is. Irresponsible kids, adults, that is what they look like. And you went ahead and took the risk of bringing a child into this world, and you are now at risk of allowing this to play out for one of them or all of them. And for Celeste and I, we do get the looks. We've had the conversations from people of, you know, what the heck are you doing with five kids in this world? Why would you do that to yourselves? And for a lot of people, and you know, I forget about their experiences, it makes sense for them to say that. And I just like, I have no idea what you're talking about. You know, this is the greatest honor. But that is how things will play out right there within those first couple of verses, 12 through 15. Now, let's talk about what God hates. This is verse 16. So here are six things God hates, and one more that he loathes with passion. Eyes that are arrogant, a tongue that lies, hands that murder the innocent, a heart that hatches evil plots, feet that race down a wicked track, a mouth that lies under oath. And what is the last one? A troublemaker in the family. Warning, or continuing 20 through 23, and this is where I found a lot of encouragement for you parents. Good friend, follow your father's good advice. Don't wander off from your mother's teachings. Wrap yourself in them from head to foot. Wear them like a scarf around your neck. Wherever you walk, they'll guide you. Whenever you rest, they'll guard you. When you wake up, they'll tell you what's next. For sound advice is a beacon. Good teaching is a light. Moral discipline is a life path. And so for our children to go ahead and take our teachings to heart. I was looking at, you know, as I was putting this together, you know, Celeste and I over the last couple of weeks, dialoguing and thinking this through, I came across just a list of six ways parents destroy their children without trying. So you don't even have to try. You just destroy them. Here's six of them. You get so busy providing for them that you don't have time for them. That was number one. Two, you just set a bad example. You're just yourself. You ruined them. Three, expressing displeasure regularly. Great examples from Carl and Jeff on when we are at displeasure with our kids on how that is handled. Four, not enforcing boundaries. Five, leaving them to choose their friends. Six, finally, you can destroy your children by not giving them any responsibility or holding them accountable. Those are six ways parents destroy their children without trying. And that was by Michael Pearl, that list. without trying. And he shared this one other little note there, just a little perspective. You are best suited to the task of training your children when you work under the assumption that they are destined to ruin, unless you get proactive and do some things much better than the average parent. And for a lot of us, these children come in, you know, you look at, you know, the Pike's little twins, you know, they're just little angels and such beautiful little things, and a lot of us hold on to that instead of, you know, and then maybe at some, I don't know at what stage we look at it like, we got a sinner here. You little sinner. That these kids that we're working with, they are sinners. And it is our responsibility to bring them to the light. To go ahead, you know, for them to see the light side. They're on the dark side, to the light side. Many times we think that our kids are good enough and we're just trying to prevent them from the evil, the ruin. But for us to think that they are in the ruin and we are going ahead and we are taking them to that of finding Christ and along with being God-fearing and all that goes along with that. Those of you that know me, you know coffee and I can't stand coffee. It's just, and it goes back to my childhood and my mom going ahead and making good coffee on the stove, just stirring it. And part of it was my responsibility was to stir because we didn't have a coffee maker. And she'd drink it in the morning, just straight, no cream, nothing in it. And then I think it was just Folgers in your cup, her cup. And then every day, the routine was to give my mother a kiss. And every day it was deep breath, inhale before you get too close, because I knew what would come my way. And so it was that of coffee breath that scared me off to coffee, and to this day it continues to. But she has modified her lifestyle, our marriage. Yeah, it was on the rocks for a little while. Well, so, oh, the mother-in-law. Over the last couple of weeks, I've been able to share. I was at the Women's House Church for the North House and then on our men's retreat. And I have been talking about, the thing that I've been challenged by since Faith Walkers is the idea of brewing. Things are always brewing in our life. Dan Rollins, you were at one point a coffee drinker, and I believe you're still a coffee drinker. Amen, okay? So, I have coffee here.
I won't kiss you.
I don't want you to kiss me. But how many times in the morning do you just wake up and you open up a container of coffee and you just, I don't even know what you, the grounds, you just eat the grounds. You just do it. Just do it sometime. I have never seen anybody just open up. This is Caribou whole bean coffee, medium roast. But it's smooth and classic, just to top it off. And what I'm saying here is, when we're talking about drinking coffee, it goes through the process. I think about our children as being this right here. And to go ahead and get them into the to the point that you are wanting, as Chris Salzer, or let's say Mike Biebelheimer here this morning, I don't know if this is coffee, but just took this, and his life was renewed. And it was going to be a great day because he got his coffee in him, and he is caffeinated, and he's not all natural anymore. But for our children to go ahead over time, to be brewed, to be, what do we call that? Celeste, what? Percolated. Is that, for it to become percolated, to come alive, that these children will be something over time. But what happens with brewing, you will end up with bad coffee. Bad coffee is as bad as it really gets for your mouth, especially when you expect it to be good. And you will spit that out. And I'll tell you, our kids, over time, they can spew. And I see it on a regular basis as an education teacher. I will see it. I witness it. A number of you ended up being bad coffee when you were raised. Your parents wanted to spew you out of their mouth, to get rid of you, or what came out of your life was just horrible. It was a mess. It was gross, disgusting, whatever. And so that was just one of my little visuals. But I think about this, and a lot of this, you know, for what Celeste and I do, you know, maybe some of you think we've got an unfair advantage with Mark Darling being Celeste's father. I don't believe that is the case. I believe Celeste was raised. I had a good upbringing for my younger years. And I think, you know, the father that Mark is to Celeste and I and to our grandkids, he would do the exact same things for any of your children. I think he relishes that opportunity to be grandpa to all these kids, to be a support to any parent off the streets, if he's at Aldi, if someone, you know, that is where he's at. But going back to getting your family to Mars, you know, thinking about that, you know, boy, that the trajectory, how that has to be so well aligned. The room for error, there really is no room for error if you're going to get your family to Mars. And the same thing with the brewing process. Those two things, I just kind of put that together as two kind of analogies. But what would some, you know, brokenness for our children, if things don't go right, what does it look like? And you know, and I get to see brokenness on a regular basis. For those who don't know, I'm a special education teacher in the public schools, been there 17 years. And I deal with brokenness on a regular basis. You know, to go ahead and for another teacher to tell you, just so you know, so-and-so is off right now. Have you noticed they've been off? Yes, I've noticed they're off. Well, she's got an STD. She's 13. 13. And that doesn't... It's not fair. Something went wrong. To go ahead, you know, the people that are in the news most often, right, you know, if you go to ESPN, Johnny Manziel is whacked up. He's messed up. Football player, those of you who don't know, but, you know, his dad came out. I don't think he's going to make it. He'll be lucky if he makes it to 24. He's 23 right now. Parenting counts. Billy Ray Cyrus, I think he was a little off on his parenting. Something just didn't turn out there. You got the example of Ethan Couch. Who knows Ethan Couch? He's been in the news a lot. AKA Affluenza. Is that how you say that? Affluenza. Who was being charged with murder in a car wreck, and his parents were able to change that because of the high level standard of living that they had, and that it was that of the affluence that caused him to be in such a place. And his life is a mess, and you can go on the news. But his name was Ethan Couch. Yesterday, we're reading the story 12 Angry Men in my class. Classic, great story. And there's a boy that's on trial. And I went ahead and I deal with delinquent kids on a regular basis. And I took the time to go ahead and I go on to the Minnesota Department of Corrections. And I can go ahead. There are three boys. I can pull up right there. I had these three boys in my class. It was when I was taught in North Minneapolis for about 14 years ago. All three of them are still in prison. One of them for going ahead and initiation for a gang. He went ahead and robbed a guy and did execution style in Uptown. That was one. One was going ahead and pulled off a statuary rape. And then you had weapon violations in all three of these. And I bring up these examples, and I also think about it, the divorce piece. People get divorced, it's usually because of one big event. For these kids, one big event. If it's having sex when you're 13, if it's going ahead and raping someone, if it's killing someone, that is the big event. But it is so many thousands of little decisions that lead to that outcome. And that is the same thing for our children. It's thousands of little things that we're doing for them and developing that responsibility and with what we are shooting for. And I wanted to put one little warning out to you parents before we get into the responsibility piece with Celeste coming on board here. But it was that of what I have seen in society with our generation. When we were in college, there were certain things expected. That has all been pushed back 4 years. All that stuff now happens in high school. What you thought of what happened in high school, that all happens now in middle school. What you thought happened in middle school is now in the elementary schools. And so you go ahead and you're thinking about raising these kids, trying to get them to 18 to handle this stuff. You don't have 18 years. You could think of 14 years. In the schools, many times, once the parents see that their kid is in sixth grade, they check out. They're done. The kid is how they are. And so in your mind, you got to understand that you're in for the long haul on this. But you have to accelerate this. And it's and kids that are out in the public schools, they're going to, just keep talking to them, check in with them. I had a parent and followed the kid through school all day yesterday. And it was just eye-opening in a good way, but also some concerning ways. Just stay on board. But also, for you that are going ahead and doing the homeschooling piece, you better make sure you're equipping your kids for what the world's like, because it's a mean place. They will be eaten up. And that is where the responsibility piece is so important, because it falls back on the kid to be able to take care of their life at that point. For Austin, kind of going out into the world. All right, Celeste, let's go ahead. Let's get you in the game here. So what we wanted to start with here was the significance of what it looks like to have our child's heart. This is something that for us, we have talked about since Quinlan was just that little child. And you think about, this is just a little picture of Quinlan and Raleigh. You got to remember that this is where they were at. And that, if I had Austin up here, they're going to be eye to eye, and I am now at the point where I can kiss Quinlan's head without having to bend my neck. I thank them for growing, because it's a lot easier just to nod my head and kiss them instead of bending over. But you have to remember, time goes by so fast. And one lesson I've learned, embrace the present. So many of us parents are just like, oh, when they're 18, oh, Quinlan's 9. We're halfway there, sweetie, and then we can go ahead and have our next life. But we are, embrace the present. Don't be just living for tomorrow. I look forward to when Caroline is done with diapers here in the next 3 months. But in the meantime, I will embrace changing those diapers like I never have, because it's going to be gone. Maybe I won't. But so, Celeste, go ahead.
Is this on? Okay. So we thought we would just share a little bit in our house what it looks like to have our child's heart. That's just something that, like we said, we talk a lot about, that we have value a lot of importance in our house on making sure we have our kid's heart. And if we ever sense that there is a struggle or we're having a battle, even like Carl said earlier, that's a heart issue. We need to address that. And the challenge is now, as Quinlan is 9, as they're getting older, is a lot more of these are heart issues. There's not as many black and whites as no touch. Well, you touched that, so you disobeyed. There's a lot more heart issues and a lot more verbal correction that has to happen, a lot more talks, drawn-out conversations that have to happen now that he is older. But in our home, some of the things that we look for as being... Does our child have a soft heart? Do we have our child's heart? The first one is a quick response to our correction. So if we've corrected them or given a consequence for something, that we see a quick turnaround, that they've gone and they've changed their attitude really quickly, or they've gone right to do what it was we asked them to do in the first place. That's a really good indicator for us that we have their heart. Another indicator is that tenderness after the correction. And by that I mean, do they want to come up and give you a hug or a kiss or say, I'm sorry, mommy? If, I've had it with a child that they've stood there after a correction and they don't even want to look at me. And I'm like, okay, we're not done here. there's still a blockage in your heart, and we need to work that out. And until my child is ready to give me a hug, and then we can walk out and go on with our day, we usually take time to keep working through that, because something in their heart hasn't changed yet. Another is willingness to acknowledge their wrongdoing by saying, Mommy, I'm sorry that I did not obey you, or I'm sorry that I did this or I did that. A willingness to ask for forgiveness for that. That's also a really good indicator that you have your child's heart. And another one, I touched on that earlier, is that they're quick to change their behavior, that maybe, you know, your correction was they had a bad attitude about something or school or about a job you asked them to do, that they make a quick change in that behavior, that they go back out and they put a smile on their face. I'm not talking about faking a smile, but that there's a genuine change in their behavior or in their attitude. Another thing for us is that they are demonstrating that they have a heart of a servant. And I just think about, even just an example this morning, a friend is babysitting our kids today, and she was going to take them outside to play in the snow, and I think I was out loud saying, okay, well, you guys are going to have to help get all the snow stuff. And without being asked, Raleigh just went downstairs and started bringing up everybody's snow stuff and laying them out in piles and putting everybody's hats and mittens with the appropriate pile. And I didn't know this, and I went down to find somebody's snow pants, and I was like, oh, we need to find Caroline's snow pants. And he said, oh, well, I already got them, Mom. I brought them upstairs. I brought everybody's stuff upstairs. You did? Well, yeah. Thank you, buddy. I really appreciate you helping. He just had a heart to serve. And that's what we work towards. You know, that's what you work towards. And that was really a blessing to me, that I did not need to even ask him to do that. He did that on his own. And that, my last point, is that taking the initiative to serve without being asked. And as our kids are getting older with our boys and with Natalie, one of the things that we're hoping with our training and with this idea of instilling responsibility is that they're at that point where they are doing things on their own before I've asked them to do that. And I had that with Quinlan the other day. I was going to ask him to go get some stuff for Caroline's nap, and I went to say, hey, buddy, can you go get that for Caroline? He goes, oh, I already did that. I said, you did? He goes, yeah, I figured you were going to ask me, so I just decided to go do it before you asked. Like, well, that was thinking, and I appreciate your thoughtfulness to that and thinking to do that before I even asked you. And that, those are good moments for us, that we see they're getting it. They're getting it. They're taking responsibility for helping around the house, for helping their younger siblings, and I didn't even have to ask him to do that. So those are just, I think, signs for us that we have our kids' hearts, and that's just really important for us.
Mark brought this up probably 13 years ago or so, and it was, you know, I've always thought, you know, what my children, how my children turn out, that is the ultimate challenge, and that is, you know, that's the defining moment. But it's, but he had made that, you know, the quote or the summarizing what he had said was, the measure of raising godly children will not be the outcome of your own children, but that your children have instilled in their children. So the grandchildren, and for them to take what we're doing to heart to the degree that they are going to take it to the next generation. So it's two generations out. That is not an easy thing to do. And that's where I believe that heart piece is so important, especially as they get into the teenagers, where there is that connection, that bond that was developed very early on. I have a little note here. It's just teaching responsibility as with any life skill. If you went ahead and let's say you saw a 9-year-old or a third grader that did not know how to tie their shoes, what would be your thoughts? Thoughts. Parents should have taught them. That would be, yeah, oh yeah, you'd think you're an irresponsible child, and then what were the parents thinking? You're right. And so, we are, that is our son Quinlan. He does not know how to tie his shoes. Because we've never taught him. We never did. We've never had shoes with shoelaces. Okay? And to this day, I don't buy shoes that I don't have to, you know, if I have to tie the shoes, I don't want them. Everything's slippers to me. Just some high-quality slippers. These have laces, but they are loosely tied. But it is going ahead. You think about tying the shoes. That is, and you could look at that area in life all around us for our kids. Things just don't happen. They don't master things. They don't grasp things just because you think they should because they're in third grade. All third graders know how to tie their shoes. I was also life skill. To have a responsible person, those of you that work with other people, would you rather have be teamed up, or if you were the boss overseeing people, would you rather have a responsible person or someone that is very intellectual? Smart people, we need them, but we also need the responsible people. And I am not a brainiac. I worked hard to get through school and college. It did not come natural. But we need responsible children. And there are so many opportunities. And the standard, I'll tell you what used to be the norm for a responsible child, you will excel in this world now. Because it is so hard to find responsible people. And that is, it is a life skill, long term. It's not just in your household, but you're talking about their career and going on and on. We'll talk about that more later on. If you give an expectation, you need to follow up and make sure it's done. So for us, in our household, boys cleaning their room, we took them on for a number of years on that, and they have grasped it. They will not let their room get messy. It is organized, it's clean, we don't even say anything. It's all self-running now. Quinlan can take a little bit of credit because he's kind of more a little bit specific. He likes things a certain way. But they also learned that Papa is more than willing to go ahead and clean the room for them. And what that entails is going ahead and I just bring a bag in and I just put it all in the bag and it gets donated to someone else, or it's in my trunk for a while, or it goes somewhere. And they figured that out. You know what? Yeah, let's just get it done so that Papa doesn't have to come through. Some people might say, oh, you're hurting. Well, no, they're figuring out the realities. You're not going to go ahead and be told more than once to get this taken care of. And they figured it out. The girls will clean their room. The boys will clean their room. We will help organize their materials if they need that. Same thing with them doing the folding laundry, emptying dishwasher, shoveling, bedtime routine. That's all stuff that they are expected to do. With no follow-up needed. It's also for them to go ahead and see what teamwork looks like. I like to give them things that they think is overwhelming. That they're like, oh, we can't do that, Father. It's too much. Papa, you got to help us out. No, let's go ahead. How are you going to get this done? And all of a sudden, they're delegating, they're figuring things out. I'll do this, get this done first. Then this, figuring out the order, all that, that is all a life skill right there. Teaching what is appropriate and not appropriate. And we'd probably start this at about 2. And Quinlan was the one that brought up the word not appropriate. You know, and we've had the awkward moments with him and the other kids, you know, walking through the aisles of the store. You know, and we always have to avoid the lingerie section. Target. We also have had the moments of where we're walking by in a cart and one of the kids will see someone else that they don't think is dressed appropriately and say, point at them and say, not appropriate. We have had those moments and we've worked on dialing them back on that, on biting their lips, just look the other way. Super Bowl party, this must have been 5 years ago. We're all talking and not paying attention to the commercials, and you know, Quinlan stands up in front of the TV. Don't look, not appropriate. Get the remote. Who's got the remote? Spare me. And it is, that is something that, it's so important, the appropriateness, because you've got to get that instilled with your kids, because the world standard, it is at a level of beyond trash. Beyond. And for you to go ahead and lock in with what the word and as a family with what you are going to define as what appropriate is. Yes.
Quinlan probably must have been 4 or 5. So this was, 4 or 5 years ago. And in the morning I was doing a little circle time with the kids. It was just Quinlan, Raleigh, and Natty. I think maybe also was a baby. And I was wearing this shirt and it just started falling down. I wasn't really paying attention. And Quinlan kind of nudges me really quiet. He goes, hey, Mom, you need to fix your shirt. Oh, yes, yes, I do. So I adjusted my shirt. He's like, it's okay, Mom. Sometimes I have to fix my shirts, too.
Yes.
It was really cute. But, yeah, he was trying to make me feel not bad about needing to fix my shirt. So.
Oh, man. Yeah, his standard. You know, you'll be watching a movie or a show, and you know, they're at a beach, and all of a sudden, it's a woman in a one-piece swimsuit. Inappropriate. Like, if people are going to be in a swimsuit, we know, yes. But making sure you as a family are defining that. And next thing I had here was let them see what hard work looks like. I mean, I wish John Bruni was in our neighborhood. You got a deal on that, Healy's. But for your kids to work. When we got all that snow the other day, I mean, the kids were out for 2 hours straight shoveling snow. And then after they got done with that, they went ahead and made trails throughout our backyard. It's a bunch of mazes so they can play Pac-Man on it. And so they're you know, one person's bad, and there's two good people, and they got to trap them in the maze, and then they're it. They got eaten up. And so, but that is what hard work looks like as parents, for them to witness you, you know, for your dads. Talk about what you do on a daily basis. For your moms, what you're doing. You know, church stuff, you know, behind the scenes. Let them know. Let them get into your world. And Ryan Saul challenged me a number of years ago with this at a men's or dad's time, was let your kids serve with you. When you got stuff to do around the house, let them help you with projects. Let them see, take on that responsibility of going through that process, even though it takes you half as long and it will maybe not turn out twice as long, yes, and not turn out as nicely as probably if you just did it by yourself, but get your kids involved with the duties around the house, projects. And then we... our kids, let's see, we talked through that. Being responsible on how they treat other strangers, interacting with others, saying hello, thank you, goodbye, eye contact, starting at a young age. That is a life skill, and that is part of being responsible. And as with our kids, when they were young, and some of you have probably been up against this with them, we trained them to go ahead and give hugs as they leave places. And our boys still do this. We were at our cross-country Bible study on Sunday night, and we were at a family from the team, and we, you know, I said, okay, let's go, kids, and they're all kind of head out the car, out the door, and then they all kind of wrap back around, and they go ahead, and they give all these hugs, and they're like, hugs from kids? Wow, sweet! They were not expecting it, and I wasn't expecting my kids. I thought that would kind of die off. But it is just something that our family has done. At some point, you know, we'll wean off of that because, you know, at some point, I'm sure the girls will catch the boys' eyes and then they'll use the excuse, well, I'm sorry, but my parents said whenever I leave people, I've got to give them hugs. And, you know, and we've surprised some strangers because it almost becomes a butt rub because the kids will just kind of back up to them, the little ones, and then they just kind of stand there and the people don't respond and then we just move on. But going ahead, socially, making sure they're trained in a way that they are going to be able to be responsible with the interactions and not shying away, being timid. All right. Let's go ahead, Celeste. Breakdown of daily responsibilities.
Okay, so before we jump into that really quick, we just, having our kids have a sense of responsibility in our home is really important to us. And just a few reasons why I think it's good to instill responsibility are these. One, to encourage a sense of ownership. They have a sense of ownership in your home. Two, it teaches them to be responsible. So if they have jobs, it's teaching them responsibility. It also helps them, to have them help with family duties helps in having a sense of responsibility. It also fosters a strong work ethic. It gives them a further appreciation for their home. For your home, if they have jobs, it helps them appreciate your home more. And then you're giving them real life skills, how to clean toilets. I've been teaching the boys how to clean toilets, and they have their bathroom is in the basement, and they've been in charge of cleaning it. And Quinlan just cleaned it the other day, and learning how to do that, learning how to help in the kitchen. A lot of my kids have been wanting to help with cooking, and mommy, when can I help you cook? When can I make the meal? And so bringing them alongside and showing them how to do that. Finances, we've worked with the boys on saving and what does it mean to save and how do we spend our money wisely, and having them have the responsibility of tithing. They know what that means, and they do it regularly. If they get money, even for their birthdays, they have to give some as tithe. We've just taught them what that means. And that is a life skill that has to be taught, responsibility with your money. And then it helps cultivate a giving heart. You know, if they see mom and dad opening their home and having people in and the responsibility of taking care of your home so you can have a clean house and have people over, it helps cultivate their heart. So those are just some reasons why it's good for your kids to have responsibilities. And then we just thought we would outline at the varying ages right now of our kids what we have them be responsible for, what that looks like in our house. Because we even have our 2.5-year-old has jobs. I mean, she is at the age where she understands what that means, what that looks like, and she wants to be involved. So that's Caroline. She's 2.5, and right now, some of her quote-unquote responsibilities are that when we ask her to pick up her toys, that she cleans up her toys cheerfully. That when we are having quiet time, that she's able to sit on her blanket and participate in quiet time and sit there quietly, which is somewhat of a challenge for her because she's kind of chatty and she likes to be doing she just is kind of a busybody. So this is good for her. We're working on this. That she's able to play independently, too, for periods of time. If I'm working on school or I need to help the kids with something, that she's okay if we say, Caroline, mommy wants you to play in your room. I mean, that might not be a responsibility at her age, but in helping her instill these expectations for her, it's developing in her responsibility for the future. That she can follow directions and obey quickly and cheerfully. And if I ask her to go get a diaper and wipes, if she has a dirty diaper, she'll run to her room and bring me her diaper and her wipes. And then she'll lay down and wait for me to change her diaper. She understands that. She can follow those directions. She loves to help with setting the table. That's her favorite thing. She knows, she almost, half the time, she gets the right number of bowls. She can't even count, but she'll just grab the bowls and she grabs the spoons and she goes and sets the table, and she wants to do that. She really likes helping. She wants to help unload the dishwasher. And another thing for her, too, is that being respecting our home, so teaching to be gentle, like we don't break these things. She understands that I need to be gentle with that. I'm not going to break that. This is something that's special in our house. So for a 2.5-year-old in our house, that's what responsibility looks like in training. So then Elsa, we couldn't find the 8x10 photo of Elsa, so she's got the 5x7 this morning. But Elsa's 4, and what we have currently, what we expect from her, or some of her responsibilities are, is that she has to dress herself without me helping, that she is able to get herself ready in the morning, and she can do that without my help. She can. Does she always want to? No, she doesn't. But we tell her that's part of her morning routine. That's part of her chores, that she needs to take care of getting herself ready. That she can also get herself ready for bed on her own. It's the same way, that she can get her pajamas on, that she still needs a pull-up, that she can get her pull-up on, that she can brush her teeth. And all of our kids, the oldest kids, we actually have a chore chart in each of the room that I have laminated on their wall so that they know every day these are what I'm responsible for. So even Elsa has her chore chart. And that's things like brushing her teeth and hair, making her bed, picking up her room. And she has to set the lunch table every day. Elsa's job is lunch table duty, so she always has to set the table for lunch. Another responsibility that I've given her is helping to play with Caroline when I do school with the older kids in the morning. She has to play with Caroline in the other room, and they're either playing toys or they get to watch a short video, or she helped Caroline get her snack. But those are things that I've given her as responsibilities, and I think she appreciates that I want her to help, want her to be involved. And then she also has to partake in folding her own clothes. So even if they're messy and not done right, I don't even, I just say, okay, girls, here's your clothes. You go fold them, and they need to all get put away in your room. And she understands that that's a responsibility that we've given her. So then we're moving on to Natalie, and she is 6 now.
Yep.
And Natty has the same, a chore chart in her room, so she has daily responsibilities also, making her bed and hair and teeth, that's on there. And she gets to set the breakfast table every day. So Natty's on a breakfast duty. And she also now has graduated to the age of helping dress and change Caroline. So almost every day now we have her change Caroline in the morning. She knows how to change her diaper. She knows how to put clothes on. I'll help sometimes by laying the clothes out. And sometimes I still do it. But she's learning, and she wants to be helpful. In fact, Natty has a heart for babies. She wants to be a mom so bad. She tells me every day, I just want to be a mom. I just want to be a mom. And that touches me because, you know, I want to think that her desire to be a mom is because she sees me being a mom to her kids, and I'm trusting that God's using my example for part of that. But she just loves babies, and so she just wants to be involved. And so I'm trying to give her responsibility in that with her little sister, who's not a baby, and who's growing up fast. But she's doing a good job with that. So also for her folding laundry, she also has to help around the house with cleaning. She does a great job of vacuuming, and she's learning how to load the dishwasher with dirty dishes now. And so that she feels really important that she gets to load the dishwasher now. So then Raleigh, he's our 7.5-year-old now, he gets to set the dinner table every night. So that's his job, and he does a good job with that. He also has the same daily chores of making bed and brushing teeth and keeping his room clean, which I really don't need to have on there. Like John was saying, that's kind of self-running now. But it's just good to have them see a list of what I'm responsible for. What do I need to do today? Also folding laundry. They have to fold their own laundry. Shoveling. Our boys do all of our shoveling now. John doesn't do it at all. It's just the boys. And it's actually their first paid job. So of all these things that I have listed, these are just expectations that we have for our children. They're not getting allowance. They're not getting paid for these things. But we decided this year the boys needed a paying job. It would be good for them to have a job to get paid for. So every time it shovels, every time it snows, they each get $5 for shoveling. So that in Minnesota, that can add up if we get a lot of snow. So they were pretty excited that this last week they had to shovel 2 days in a row because they got $10 each for shoveling. And it was hard shoveling. So that's one of his jobs. He also is the dog poop picker-upper. That is his job. What a glamorous job. So he has to go out with his bag, and we always tell him to go out when it's frozen, like, don't let it thaw. Yep. Do it today. It's going to get warm tomorrow. So he does a good job at that. It's not his favorite, but he does it without complaining. And now that the boys are at this age, one of their, I would call it a responsibility that we've given them, but it's now part of what they want to do is actually reading their Bible every morning. And we've just helped instill that, like Carl was talking about, being responsible before God. And so every morning he and Quinlan we turn our gas fireplace on, and they usually sit with me because all three of us are usually up before the girls, and we have our quiet times together. And that's been really special for me to have that time with the boys. And they both read Proverbs. Actually, Raleigh's on the Psalms right now. After a while, of like a year of reading Proverbs, he's like, could I read something else for a while? It's like, well, I'm glad that you have a heart for wanting to read God's word. So sure, where do you want to read? I want to read Romans. Okay, read Romans. And now he's like, I really want to read the Psalms. I said, okay, read Psalms. And so every day they're writing a verse. And what I appreciate is they have a heart right away to want to tell me the verse that they wrote down. I mean, they can't even wait till I'm done with my quiet time. They're like, Mom, can I just tell you my verse? Can I just tell you my verse? Okay, you can tell me your verse. And then oftentimes we'll discuss what that verse means, you know, right there. And I just have really appreciated seeing them have this heart. And our kids are in Awana, this is right now, which is kind of what Carl was talking about with the truth trackers. But on Wednesday nights, they're in Awana, and so they're doing a lot of scripture memorizations for that. And Quinlan's class is doing this reading through this reading plan. I think it's a contest, but he's been really go-getter with it and been reading. They had to start in Genesis, and he's been just reading his Bible. But then he's coming and telling me, and Raleigh, who's not even doing it, is like, you're reading about Samson? Well, I'm going to go read about Samson. So the other day, I found them both in their room, both reading their Bibles, reading about Samson, because they just wanted to read about Samson. And I'm just appreciating seeing that in them. So Quinlan, he's our oldest, 9, and Quinlan being the oldest, we've kind of told him, you have more responsibilities than everybody else. You're the oldest and lucky number 1. You know, we expect a lot from you, and he's done a really good job with that. So he's on dishwasher unloading duty, which is usually multiple times a day because we go through a lot of dishes at our house. He's on trash duty. He's on take care of the dog duty. So he feeds Linus every day. He lets him out. He also has, you know, the same daily chores that the other kids do. He also does the shoveling. He helps with yard work. He takes care of the bird feeder. He fills it up with bird seed. He does a lot of work around the house. So he's just, it's just been really neat to see him as he is growing, his heart for responsibility, his heart for wanting to contribute to our home. And we're just really encouraged by some of the things that we're seeing out of him, his initiative, wanting to be helpful, thinking ahead. Those are just these things that we're seeing now of growing him as we've, you know, placed these expectations on him, that he's rising to the challenge, and that's really encouraging. So those are just what responsibility in our house looks like right now.
And I was going to touch on this with life skills too. Thanks, Celeste, on that, the rundown there. But as we start to wrap this up here, talk reality with your kids. Have the heart-to-heart response, conversations, so they understand what you're doing now and why it's important later. So we will go ahead and we will talk about death. We will talk about that. We've been to funerals. I am turning 40 next year. And I joked with them, just so you guys know, this could be my last year. And if something happens, here's the plan. I don't plan on anything happening, but for them to understand that our time on earth is limited, and health is something that doesn't last forever. And I've talked to them. Sometimes they get kind of grossed out by people that might not have limbs or mentally are not there. And I've told them, at some point, your papa may go ahead and be in a wheelchair. At that point, what will you do? Will you take care of me? Will you please take care of me? And we go ahead and we talk through that. They go to the nursing home, with house church opportunities, and they go to the people with dementia, and they have an hour there where they are just interacting with them. That's what they're doing for an hour. But also growing up, talking about their goals later on in life, so that they're thinking about, when they're even 5-6 years old, what is happening. Quinlan has been caught up with the military since he was 2. We'll see if he goes down that path or not. And Raleigh just wants to be a coach. That's all he wants to do. He just wants to be a coach. And I'm like, well, that'll get you partly there, but the other thing is money. Let them have a little bit of money. Make those decisions. We're doing a road trip this summer, and each kid is responsible to have saved up at least $10 for every year they are. So Quinlan needs to save up $90. So he has to go ahead, and he has it saved up. He's used some of his birthday money, some of his Christmas money, and then the shoveling money. He has it set aside. That is his money. I said, okay, on that trip, that's your free money. Don't come to us. Ask for these little dollar purchases. It's all yours. And just pushing them out there, money-wise, financially, being responsible. All right. Let's see. Celeste, did you have anything else you wanted to touch on before we just do the handouts? Let's just see. We jumped over a couple of things here. Okay. Just a couple of things. Questions to ask yourself. What do I want my child to be like when they are 18? And one thing I do is time goes by quick. We have 5 kids. We expect that they're kind of in our household for 20 years. So that adds up to 100. And so I do a little percent. So I think we're about 33% of the way done with having our kids in our household. It goes way too fast. I'm not counting it down. I want them as long as I can. And then asking yourself, do I have my child's heart? Then we also wrote down, has first-time obedience been a priority in our home? First-time obedience. Oh, man, it's a battle when you have to tell kids repeated times. It's a battle. We've had those moments. And then being consistent in our training. And then I think might be the most important one here is, as husband and wife, parent, are you both on the same page with where you're going with your children? Are you holding up your end of the game? Celeste will come to me. It has happened a number of times. John, I need you to step up. You're slacking. You have to go ahead, hold each other accountable. Too much at stake here. And I'd also, I was just trying to figure out, with our family, we have no video games. And sometimes I see that as, you know, at school with technology, it becomes such a battle. And so don't let technology interfere with what you're doing for your family. So it is very easy for that to take place, and the pull for that will only get stronger as they get older. Let's see. At this point, we have got... How many of you were here? Boy, is it 5 years ago? Maybe, Mark, you remember when Rick Whitney was here? 4 years ago, he was here. He did a conference. Some of you were there, some of you were not, but he has got a lot of resources online. And if you go ahead and you Google Rick Whitney Northwest or Dads, GCM Dads, you're going to see some good stuff out there. We're going to hand out two things, and I wish there was a second one that would go with this. It is called The Measure of a Boy, The Measure of a Young Man, and The Measure of a Man. And I wish it was set up for girls too. And so maybe someday Rick will do that, or maybe it's out there, or we'll create something on our own. But it is going ahead, and it's just looking at those qualities, and these qualities will go in line with having a responsible young man. And I believe almost all of them, will line up with that of a young girl, a measure of a girl, a measure of a young girl, and the measure of a woman. There's some similarities, lots of similarities. It should line up pretty good. And then this one here, also hand out. This is the measure of a boy and a girl, the measure of a boy or girl, and it has verses. And they went ahead and they left the key words out. So now some of you have been looking for something to do on your next date. And so you can go ahead and go to Caribou, get your Bibles out, and do fill in the blank. Those are always fun games. So I'm going to hand this out also for you, and then Celeste is going to give you the answer to one of them. So it goes with the measure of a boy, girl, and then it is the measure of a teen. That is the focus. So, Jennifer, thank you very much. Michael, would you be kind enough? Okay, and then... on this white copy, if you turn it over, and we're going to do the last one. We're going to give you the fill in the blank. NIV version most likely will work best. Okay. All right. And if you have not gone through getting your family to Mars, that is all online. I'll put a plug in for strongdisciple.com. So that is done for the day. There's resources, the handouts, they're all up there, correct, Dan? Rollins? Wherever? Okay. I don't see, where's Dan? Okay, Dan, are all the documents on strongdisciple.com for getting my family to Mars?
Yes.
Okay. There it is. And then looking at it on a regular basis. All right. We were going to have you fill in the blanks on your own. If for some reason you don't have time for that, you don't want to do that, and you just want the answer key, send me an email, and I'll just send you the answer key. But the one thing is, the last one, it says the greatest, on the back side, on the bottom of the white sheet, it reads, the greatest need for successful parents is to have strong blank and strong blank. And Sluss has got the answer for you on that, since it does not come from the Bible. Scripture, yes.
The first is, the need for successful parents is to have strong hearts and strong willpower.
Okay.
Strong hearts and strong willpower.
Okay. So, all right. So that is what we've got. And we thought we'd just take maybe just a couple of minutes here. Jeff is still here. Carl's still here. Are there any questions from what we've covered just this morning here before we transition into lunch? Anything that just kind of, how did that work out, or why did you do that? Yes. Cat.
How did you guys all decide when to pay for a job and when not to pay?
I guess the way I look at it, my kids don't get allowances in our household. I give them a commission where I just transfer money every month. They don't even know what's going into their savings account. So I call it a commission. It's what they're doing it based, they're earning it based off of what they're doing. So I look at an allowance as being more of a privilege. And I start doing that when they're one. So when they're one, they get $1 per month. When they're nine, they get $9 per month. When they're 18, they'll get $18 per month. This is just their own little savings account. Yep, this is not the college. Nope, that's a whole other scenario. So with paying them, we started doing that last year, giving them money. And I've had them help out on little things too. And I'll say, okay, here's $2. Thanks for your help. $5 I think might be a little too much for them. But because next time, they're going to sit down, well, we need to negotiate this. Raleigh wanted to know, well, there's 10 inches of snow. Shouldn't we get paid $10 for that? I was like, no, you got your five. So I think it's between you and your, I don't think there's a right or wrong. But don't let that be driving what they're doing based off of earning the allowance. And that is, we've stayed so far away from that, which I'm thankful for.
Yeah, we started paying our kids when we understood that they were hard. So the chores were sort of just beauty. And as they grew, and we could see that they were self-motivated and they were finishing those chores, then we can kind of create a lot of them at the ages. But one thing is for sure, they don't get.
So I don't know if you want to call it allowance or not, but if it's allowance, they definitely have to earn it. So there. Yeah, no, one thing that I think is important, and I don't mean to, it's just my opinion, I think, money management, right? I wasn't taught any money management, so from a fairly early age, we had systems in place where they could touch, feel, hold, tithe, save. We have this little piggy bank, right, that has different slots for tithing and for saving and for investing and for spending. And my thriving financial Lutheran grandmother gave it to us. And so it's been a very helpful tool. So, yeah, I always had them doing something to earn some money that they could touch and they could then go ahead and then we deliver the money from the Rock to Evergreen, and they always come with. And when we have that responsibility, our kids are able to put their money into the safe themselves and learn how to give to God is one of the key things there. But, yeah, they definitely earn their allowance. They certainly don't get their allowance. We've struggled back and forth. Our kids forget, or our schedules get so crazy. Then Emily and I talk, like, do we pay them this week? Did they earn it? And there's always a struggle. We recently come across something on Pinterest that is like basically just little envelopes for the different chores, and if they don't do them, then they can just go ahead and take their little $2 out of the sweeping envelope or the other envelope for the dishes. And this is just where we're at. I wouldn't start paying Jameson, for example, at 4 until he's proven that he could work hard without that incentive of cash. But Mark's always said something that's always resonated with me is that we want to teach our kids that hard work brings a reward. Hard work brings a reward. So that was why I decided to give them hard cash that they can touch, feel, and hold. I also give them money in their savings account, though.
And the other thing, good stuff there, Jeff. And the other thing for you to discuss, too, is we're going down the path probably where our kids have to have $12,000 of their own money saved up if they want to go to college. Their own money saved up, being ready, being responsible to go to that next chapter. And if they have to work a year before that happens, that'll be something. But we're also looking, trying to give them opportunities for that money to grow over time. It sounds like such a huge amount of money, but if you're talking about, you're thinking about it, when they're starting at 10 and, putting $100 a year into that, and over time, it'll add up. All right, Lori.
I think as they get a little older, there is a stage where you almost kind of become more of a coach, where you're talking things through. And it's kind of making sure they have a perspective And it, you know, and probably once they're four-ish, they should be able to start doing some of that. And you know, it's kind of more of having a rational mind for them to be able to rationalize things. It's a little tricky. And one thing for our kids is they've always looked at discipline as a form of love from us to them. And that is something they communicate to us. And I think there are, we have had our stretches where we, you know, we could go 3 months where our child just is, you know, it's just, we are not connecting. And, you know, and we've stayed firm to what we know we are working our kids towards. And they have come around. Now, there might be some cases where that's not going to happen. You know, it might be more of a, you know, additional needs of the child, or it could be the approach of the parent. But for the most part, you know, it's usually, it does come around. But I think, love, it's the talking, and then also doing the follow-up when they're outside of the situation and or in the form of discipline. So it's at the breakfast table, going ahead and say, you know what, yesterday, remember at breakfast, we really struggled. And, you know, for today, what can we do so we don't have that difficult moment? And you might go ahead and you might give a little bit, and the kid might, and it might take care of itself. So, you know, it just, you know, if consistency, yeah, consistency is really important. But also, you know, when they're in the bathroom or in the bedroom and they're in the mind of consequence, you're trying to process with them there, I think it's really difficult. And so in the morning, you know, first thing in the morning, hey, it's a new day. Here's what we've got planned. This is what we're going to be working on. So that would be a couple of thoughts.
And I think a lot of times with my younger ones, too, I even ask them when we're done with our consequence, I'd like you to give mommy a hug. And if they won't give me a hug, that's when maybe we have more issues to work out. So they're not always voluntarily giving me a hug or voluntarily saying, I love you, Mom. There's times that I'm saying, I'd like you to give mommy a hug now. And a lot of time, most of the time, I say they will do that. But there's been some times when even some of my older kids will be like, not very happy about the situation. And that's another consequence because we've talked it out. Like your attitude is still not okay with what just happened here, and we're gonna have another consequence for that. And so sometimes it's just being consistent, and eventually it's gonna come around.
Yep. Yep. And I think, you know, and with the discipline piece, I mean, I don't believe, like, with our oldest kids, that's the driving force. You know, we've gotten to that point. There is a definite stage. You need to go ahead and make sure you utilize that time. But, like, for our older kids, I mean, discipline, you know, it is used, but it's different. You know, it's a lot more verbiage, a lot more talking things out. You get a little bit more creative. So, and as parents, you just have to be kind of aware of when you're kind of opening up that new season. All right. You know what? We need to go ahead and wrap up here. If you have questions, feel free. I mean, you know, I'm sure Carl and Jeff, you know, any of us, send us an email, call us. If we can be of any support,